Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I actually met my wife on CatholicSingles.com, if you can believe that.
Really?
Yes, I had never done that before. Didn't have any problems with dating.
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
One, two, three, listen.
Welcome to the Shoot the Shiitake podcast with me, Father Leo Padalinghug. I'm a Catholic priest on a mission to bring people of all different faith and backgrounds together to learn, to love, and accept one another even if we disagree. We gotta be willing to listen to each other, as God does with us and as God intends his followers to do. We don't try to get too technical about the morality and the laws, but we take those technicalities and make it practical. And we do that by listening. And this week I have the pleasure of listening to Elizabeth Lev. She is an art historian living in Rome, originally from Boston. She combines art and faith as a lecturer, as a tour guide, as a professor for the University of Chicago, the University of Bologna, and now also as a professor for the Rome campus for Duquesne University. If you want to support our podcast, simply go to my website, platinggrace.com, and support us just by going to the link. It'll take you to the Patreon page where you can become a premium subscriber and get all of the new premium content as well as some special perks. But for now, I hope you enjoy my deep dish discussion with art historian and faith leader, Liz Lev, here as we return to Shoot the Shiitake. Well, thanks for joining this deep dish discussion, Elizabeth Lev. Liz and I have known each other for several years, and it's just an honor to chat with you and to have you to shoot the shiitake. I want to ask you first and foremost, how is your health, the health of your family, while you're in quarantine in Rome?
Well, thank you for asking. We are all very healthy. We are in Lazio, which is not one of the harder hit regions in Italy. And really, most of us here in the region of Lazio are doing pretty well health-wise, just chafing a little bit under the boot, as it were.
And at this stage of this interview, I'm going to try to release this interview as soon as possible, but how many weeks of quarantine have you all been in?
We're going into our third week of quarantine now. We're going into our third week. And so it's my neighborhood. I understand some of my friends, they still have the singing on the balcony at six. My neighborhood.
Not you all.
No, we've just settled into the let's get this over with.
Got it. Okay. And for people who don't know the regions of Italy, Lazio is in Rome.
Roma Lazio.
Yep. Yeah. And you are, how far are you where you live from, say, St. Peter's Basilica?
So to my intense frustration, I live 15 minutes on foot from St. Peter's, and I cannot go to St. Peter's. It's bit of a sore spot for me.
I'm sure it is, and I want to ask you about that because just recently the Holy Father came out to the piazza, to the square of St. Peter's, and he blessed people with the monstrance. Now, for a lot of Catholics who aren't as into their faith, and maybe a lot of non-Catholics listening to the show, what did he do exactly, say, from even a lay perspective? Look, folks, I could give you all the theology and spirituality, but what I want to do is hear from you, Elizabeth Lev. You're a lay person, but you do a lot of work with the church. What did he do, and what did it do for you?
Well, I watched it last night via live stream, and you know, again, frustrated that it was so close. I was like, why aren't I standing in that the edge of that rainy square watching this? Although, honestly, you got a much better view on television. I think one of the, and besides the importance of the Pope praying with us, for us, doing what the Pope's job is, really interceding for his people. I think the visuals on that scene that I hope everybody watched were very, very powerful. That image of, the few really stick out in my mind. We saw Pope Francis walking up the empty St. Peter's Square, and we all remember all those 175,000 people teeming that square, and that kind of loneliness of the, you know, shepherd who is looking to regather his flock, because we all feel very scattered. We've all been closed up in our houses. We all feel kind of distant from each other. And one of the worst things about this virus is that it tends to make us look at the other as the enemy, like you could be the carrier. So you're afraid to be around other people because you may be infecting. You don't want other people near you. So I think what that image of the Pope walking alone, trying to regather the fold of sheep to follow, right, was very moving. Then we saw him praying in front of two images, two very, very, one image extremely ancient and the other one quite old. And image number one, one that I found it lovely to see, the crucifix taken out of San Marcello a Corso. It's a crucifix that had been used in a plague in the early 1500s, I think 1522, and processed through the city. And, you know, I saw people this morning, and I'm an art historian, so this is the kind of stuff I'm really supposed to be worried about. But I saw people going, oh, it's getting rained on. Yeah, you have your 16th century kitchen. I'm like, that's what it's there for. It was made to be rained on. Yeah. So it was, I really, for a moment, like, let's just remember why that crucifix exists. It exists to be out there and held up in times of danger. So I really appreciated it getting rained on.
Well, what exactly, you know, the history of it, and that's why I love talking about this. And I want you to speak about the second image as well. But the first, about this crucifix of San Marcello, you know, like, first of all, every church has something of incredible importance in Rome. How many churches are there in Rome again?
Well, somewhere the numbers range between 360 and 500.
Okay, so yes, exactly. I mean, and there are chapels all over the place. You can't walk a street without like running into a church. That's how many there are. But everyone, a lot of these churches have things that are significant, including this crucifix of San Marcello. And you mentioned that it was used during a plague. Now, again, for a lot of people, they don't understand, what does a crucifix do that would protect people? I think that's what a lot of people have to ask. You know, what good was it for the Holy Father to bring out that beautiful vessel, the monstrance with the host in it? What does that do?
Why does every single person at a Notre Dame game show up with the Fighting Irish shirt? I mean, it's a rallying cry. I mean, for us, this is what we rally behind. We rally behind Christ crucified. Now, the image itself, I mean, the difference is obviously you're thinking, well, every church in Rome crucifix. Yes. But some are actually made for processions. Some are actually made to be taken and to be brought around the city. And that's actually a crucifix that would have been used in various occasions, including Holy Week, when, you know, before the unification of Italy and the secularization of Italy, when the Pope was quite literally the king of Rome, you would have seen a lot more of these processions for virtually any occasion. As you know, we basically only have Corpus Domini now in Rome. But what I'm trying to get at is that carrying the image of Christ crucified, Christ who suffered, pierced, wearing that crown of thorns, humiliated, that is the city brought to its knees following behind that and remembering that Jesus resurrected from the death so we could have eternal life is really, it's very, very, very important image for us. And I'm very appreciative of the fact that, and it was very brilliant, I must say, that Pope Francis brought that crucifix, which is a lesser known object, not only his favorite object. We know he loves the icon of the Madonna Salus Populi Romani, which was the other image, the other object that was on display last night during that ceremony. And that one I was looking carefully at the case, because that thing, the very youngest it can be, would have to be around 590 AD. And I was thinking, don't know how that's going to do in the rain. But the fact is, it is another object that was meant to be carried in through the city. And as a matter of fact, the reason why I say 590 AD is because Pope Gregory the Great, during a plague in the city of Rome, carried that icon, that exact icon that the whole world looked at, or everybody who had the good sense to tune in last night looked at. He carried that icon through the city of Rome in 40 different processions. Now, apparently, modern medicine, modern science says we aren't allowed to do processions anymore. So the Pope did the procession for us, putting up this image that the church has prayed to in times of danger, in times of sickness, in times of invasion, in times of every time we've been threatened. We look to Mary, the salvation of the Roman people.
Now, with these sacred images, a lot of people would say, well, you know, it costs so much money. Why don't we just simply sell it so that we can buy ventilators for people in Lombardia? I mean, I want you to just speak to them as an art historian, but also as a faithful Catholic, and speaking to the secular world that are looking at these and thinking, this is witchcraft, this is hocus pocus. Granted, it might have been historical, but it's worth something now. You know, and by the way, folks, these sacred images are for everyone. You can go to the Church of San Marcello. You could go to the Basilica, you know, to see the Salus Populus Romani. It's all right there. It's all there for you. But what would you say to people who would look at this and scoff?
I would give you a sort of a two-pronged argument. One, if it weren't for the fact that Pope Francis was holding that crucifix, I'm not quite sure how much money and how many ventilators you could buy for it. So, I mean, it's part of what made it valuable. It would make it valuable on the market today if you were trying to sell it on eBay. Pope Francis held it. Most people would be like, I don't know, what should I bid on this? So, first of all, this idea of that reducing this stuff to a monetary value that you're going to solve an immediate problem sort of discounts the fact that the city of Rome looked to these objects in the case of the Madonna Salus Populi Romani, we've looked to it for 1400 years for a rallying cry. And then at the same time, again, I would go back to, you know, why at this point, why don't we just like sell the Statue of Liberty? There are certain things that are defining. There are certain things that help people to reset their identity. And again, in this particular crisis, which is a very interesting one, because it is a crisis that drives people apart. You are encouraged to look at your neighbor as your enemy. You're encouraged to consider yourself a danger to your own family. It is a crisis that has really brought out a sense of isolation, which is really quite terrifying. And there's a concern about the future implications. To have the image of a Jesus crucified, to have the image of a Mary who has seen many other crises before in this city, to be able to rally around and say we've navigated through this one, we'll navigate through the other. The people who are going to look at it superstition are just going to look at it as superstition. I'm sorry, I don't know what they have as their little to help them get through this. You know, some people will have, I suppose, their rock crystals. Some people will, you know, drink themselves to oblivion. Maybe that's another way of handling it. But I think that the Catholics or the Christians look to the image of the cross as a way for us to unite our suffering. Even when we're physically separated, you really want to complain about that, dude. I think the problem's with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, that image of our Blessed Mother is in Santa Maria Maggiore, right? And that's and it's just literally a stone's throw away from the main train station, so you can go there, ladies and gentlemen. If you come on a pilgrimage with Rome, maybe I'll even have Liz lead us on that tour, because she is really one of the best, really probably the best, I'm just saying. And that's why it's an honor to have you on. But I do want to ask you this, because you're American, but you're also Italian. You kind of share and understand both cultures, what makes us great, what makes us crazy. I've lived in Rome for long enough to know that Italians aren't the best rule followers. They always joke and say that the traffic lights are suggestions or decorations. And so it's amazing to know that Italy has been under quarantine for 3 weeks. Has this happened in your lifetime and experience there? And how are the people taking it besides just going stir crazy?
I think the Italians have, no, obviously in the time I've lived here, we've never lived through, I've been here for, I guess it's 30 years now. I've never lived through anything like this. I've never lived through anything like this in my life. And I think most people of my age group have never lived through anything short of if they were residents of a communist country. And they were under totalitarian rule. It has been a little disconcerting for me as an American to watch a series of decrees come down every single day. There's a new decree. It feels a little bit like that wall in Hogwarts where the Ministry of Magic is throwing up a decree. And there are elements of it that as an American I find very, very difficult to accept. It's been a little surprising to me how quickly the Italians adapted to it. I probably should have had my first clue when the no smoking rule went into effect back into 2000. And there was just a blanket no smoking rule. And the Italians obeyed it the next day. I mean, granted, it was done by sending the police into every single restaurant. Fines and shutting down restaurants. I mean, the thing is, when Italy wants to enforce something, they use a very, very, very heavy-handed, as evidenced in this particular lockdown, a very, very heavy-handed way. And I have to say, you know, coming from Boston, I am not. I don't respond well to the very heavy-handed system. I find the Italians are far better equipped to handle this. This sort of constant threat. So you see, as the numbers go up of the contagions, it's always kind of thrown back, and it's your fault. You Italians aren't following the rules, so we're going to be giving you more rules, and we're going to give you stricter. So I've got the police patrolling around my house all the time. For a while, they had these. They stopped doing it, thank God. But they had loudspeakers saying, stay in your houses, stay in your house. It felt like you were living in like some sort of, you know, one of those 1980s movies that they would make, like Sylvester Stallone, to make you scared of like the eventual communist invasion. It's been a little disconcerting. And so frankly, I'm not as well equipped to handle it. All I do is a lot of cooking. But I will say to have Pope Francis you make a few of these statements that he's made, sort of when the churches, the bishop conference shut down all the churches, and he said, let's not be so drastic. The magnificent event of last night where he, you know, the pilgrimage he did on the streets of Rome. These have been very helpful for us to really kind of, or especially for, you know, those of us who are really chafing, to really feel like we have a leader who is helping us understand that this is the cross we have to bear right now.
And how are the Italians? I mean, granted, you're very much sequestered and you don't really get a chance to speak to your neighbors, but, you know, I'm sure you can talk on the phone with friends and such like that. What has this done for their faith? Have you seen kind of like a renewal? Because Rome is a pretty secular city these days, and a lot of churches are quote unquote empty. That's not true. That's a lot of kind of cynical approach. I've been to the churches, and there are always people there praying, and there are so many of them that, you know, who knows? But the churches are not as full. Young people do struggle with secularism. What's been your sense of this? Has it impacted the faith of Romans?
It's a really interesting question, and I think the answer to that will only come out later when this is all over. The churches, as you know, in our list of necessities, I mean, the state is not being very helpful in our list. It is a very interesting argument to be made when this is all over. The state has put down among the list of necessities tobacco shops, grocery stores, pharmacies, gas stations, but not churches. And so the beyond the cancellation of public masses, and technically, we have to fill out a form to go out, we can be stopped by the police at any moment, and the police can challenge your motive and say, you know, you are too far from your house to have to be going to a grocery store, ergo you get a fine of somewhere between 300 and 4,000 euro, which you can imagine for people whose income has been completely decimated, not decimated, completely removed. It's a terrifying thing. So on that score, the fact that the state has really not included the possibility of going to a church to pray as a motive to go out is already an interesting hindrance, and it makes it more difficult for us to understand if people are really, you know, rallying to their faith right now. I think yesterday's response to Pope Francis's walking pilgrimage in the city, the response to Pope Francis's midday Our Father, the evening rosary proposed by the Bishops' Conference, and of course yesterday's event at St. Peter's. I think these are having a positive impact, but it's hard for us to tell because we can't really see or get much sense of what people are doing. But when it's all over, we will have a sense when we see, you know, people return. Where will they return to? Where will they start going to? Will it turn out that people's faith helped get them through it? With my friends, we just don't know what we would do without faith, honestly. It's just, as you face a single day without that hope, I don't know how to do it.
And your day-to-day, I'm kind of interested in this because Italians have a very different culture from America. Americans will stockpile when they shop. Italians do not. They go to the market literally every day. And so I kind of want to hear the day-to-day experiences for a Roman and also an American.
So the Americans, the Italians, and I am fully Italianized on this one. We go to the market every day. We go do our grocery shopping every day. Everybody goes out with their little, you know, those little wheel carts that they carry, and they go and they stand in line in the grocery stores because the grocery stores can't open before 8:30. They have to close by 7 p.m. The larger grocery stores that are less expensive, and again, don't forget the economic concerns here are extremely serious. We are in a very, very serious economic crisis as well as the coronavirus. So people go to the places where they can. Where they can buy food more cheaply. My husband and I go down to the market. It's not really an outdoor market, but we go down where the fresh stands and stalls with fruits and vegetables, and we do most of our shopping there every day. And we see plenty of people. As a matter of fact, we were there on Friday, picking up clams and salmon. I thought you might be interested in knowing what we were up to. Clams and salmon, and I was standing there and just watching the people kind of coming in. And you have to stand in line and you have to keep a safety distance. And there are people patrolling around, terrifying my fish lady so that you know, she's terrified if we get too close to each other. I mean, if you're like a husband and wife standing together going, do you think you want this fish? Like, you have to stand away. You have to stand away. They'll shut us down. I mean, there is really an aspect of a kind of a rule of fear that this is working on. But I have to say, my husband came back from a walk with my son this morning and said there was such a ridiculously long line outside of the supermarket, outside of the bread store, that they didn't end up getting my son his little pizza rossa this morning. But I'm beginning to think that that's part of like the one social thing people do. They stand 6 feet apart in line for a couple hours, but at least they're out of the house and they're kind of talking to each other. So, you know, maybe that's become part of the social event.
And I'm going to just make some observations, and I would just love to hear your comments. And people say that the Americans are not far behind with the number of casualties and infections. And while that might be true, I know that there are some differences. So for example, Americans, we live apart from each other anyway. We're not living on top of each other as you do in Rome. The elderly do not always live with their families. They just don't. In America, a lot of us are basically out there doing different things. The elderly people are living in their own homes, and the kids are just freewheeling. And also Americans, they don't like to touch each other. And Italians are constantly kissing on each other. That's just all there is to it. I mean, is that right? No. True?
I know. It's so strange. You know, you see your friends and you go to put out your hand and you can't. It's very unusual. And I do think the situation in the United States is in fact different because people do tend to live a little further apart. The inner city situation, the New York City situation, the downtown situations are a lot like ours. We We do often have, as a matter of fact, many Italians have their elderly people in the home and take care of them, or at least they're in the same building. So there's a lot more of a kind of intergenerational solidarity, as it were. And that's probably one of the reasons why it ripped through so quickly particularly in Lombardy. As you know, as everybody has found out by now, we have the second oldest population in the world. And since the coronavirus is very particularly deadly to people of an older age group, that's been one of the reasons for our very high, not just contagion rate, but our very high death rate. It is a complicated thing to try to live with this in such a social society that's very accustomed. And as you know, my son has Down syndrome, so that he doesn't, understand these new rules. So he doesn't understand the standing in line. We've gone to all this trouble to teach him to shake hands and look people in the eye. And now we're like, don't do that. It's a very, very interesting thing to have to switch gears in how one lives and then try to explain it to someone who's looking at you like you people make no sense whatsoever.
And that is a question I wanted to ask. Thank you for bringing it up. You've got a beautiful family and, and I love your family. And so thanks for telling us about your child who has special needs, a beautiful boy. But what is it like for families like yourself? How are you staying occupied? Because again, in America, most families, they have yards, and that's not necessarily true. They have common parks in Rome, and that's where people gather and they play. You don't have that yard space. So what are you doing to stay sane? And because this is going to be good advice for us spoiled Americans who do have the ability to just kind of wander in their own yard.
Well, as you know, they've locked down all our parks, so we can't take our kids out. And as a matter of fact, you are discouraged. Even though children are less susceptible to the virus, I see very little children out. I take my son out to run up and down the stairs next door a little bit just to give him a little bit of exercise because he's a 17-year-old boy. He's chomping at the bit, obviously. You will appreciate this. We do a lot of cooking. I've been experimenting with recipes I never thought I would have time to deal with. So that I was making Tunisian bricks. I almost wrote you and said, hey, do you think these bricks look right? We choose our meals. We talk about our meals. We cook together. We talk together. I am moving both my husband and I have to work in online class format. So if you don't think that takes hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours to master, we don't watch a lot of television. Actually, we take virtually no news from the television. This kind of imagery that they've been sending out of these coffins and the obituaries, I don't think that's what we need to see. So we tend not to watch that kind. We'll watch like a movie in the evening, but try to keep television consumption or film or that kind of entertainment to a minimum. And just a lot of reading. And it turns out we actually all like each other. And and in all honesty, if you got to be holed up with your kid, Josh is just the best kid in the world. He likes to keep everything neat and nice. So if I leave things in a mess, he walks around, he picks up after us. Josh was like the best quarantine kid in the history of anything.
And by the way, just two quick questions on that. Is Josh bilingual? And secondly, what is his favorite food?
So Joshua is not very, very, he's not very verbal, but he does understand both English and Italian, as I found out the hard way, because we tried to give him Italian because he lives here. So every now and then we think we're being so clever and we say something in English, but then he goes around and acts on what we've said in English, making it very clear that he fully understands. His favorite thing to eat is pasta.
Okay, well. Pasta.
As in his vocabulary, which is about 75 words, I dare say half of them are food, and of that half of vocabulary, the other half of that is carb-based food. Pizza, pasta, panino.
I don't want to laugh because it'll screw up the audio with talking over each other with this international thing, but the international technology. But I love it. One of the reasons why I appreciate you, Liz, is because you bring such a human perspective. You've got this kind of tremendous joy, even if it is under a veil of necessary sarcasm in the day and age that we live in. But I do want to ask you this as we close. What can I do as a priest to help you? I'm thousands of miles away, and granted, I can always pray for people, but just what are some of the things that you think that I can do as a priest to help you and other people in a situation like this?
Well, I think one of the things that I think about a lot is this idea of helping people find joy in, it's very hard. It's depressing in that lack of freedom and the restriction on freedom. And then the attendant situations that are happening around the virus itself, it often puts people in kind of a dark place. And I think always remembering that we are a faith of joy. We are a faith that believes in hope. The other thing I think is, and this is something I've been trying to, I just switched around one of my lessons to have this conversation with my students, this menacing threat of how things change, things that we took for granted that life was going to be this way, that I could always walk down the street and go get a glass and, you know, go get a coffee at my local coffee bar without having to fill out a piece of paper and be interrogated by the police and then have my coffee bar closed because there are no open coffee bars in the city. These are things we never really contemplated. And the fact that things of this world change. So I'm doing a class on really the Last Judgment. I'm doing a class to talk about, you know, how the church has always seen beyond this world. And it's in moments like these that we really do have an opportunity. It's not just a prison. It's an opportunity for us to become saints. This is the, you're not going to become a saint if you're doing the same thing every day and it's comfortable and you get to set your own routine. The saints, as I think Jesus said to his apostles, they will tie you and you will go where you don't want to go. And it's how you are in that moment. And I think to help keep that present, but in a happy, joyful, this is an opportunity for you to be better than you ever thought you could be, is something that we need to be hearing a lot.
I love that. And before I just sign off, I just want to give a little anecdote of what I saw on Twitter. It was great. It was a video of a man arguing, obviously, with his older daughter because he just needed to get out of the house. He put his coat on, and this is all in Italian, and the daughter was like, "You can't go out. Where are you going?" And he screams, "I'm going to go get a coffee. I'm so sick of this. I'm going to go get a coffee." He goes, "Well, all the coffee bars are closed, and you know, you can't stop an Italian man from getting his coffee." He literally walked out of the door. The next frame is him walking up to a window in their own home and just asking if he could have a cup of coffee from his wife who is on the inside of the home. That's the kind of joy we need. But Liz, I want to thank you for taking the time. Sorry for, you know, if you had difficulty hearing me, I heard you loudly and clearly. And I think our listeners are going to hear you loudly and clearly, too, that this is certainly a crisis, but it's also an opportunity to become a saint. And I'm going to end it this way, to become the beauty and the art that God has created us to be. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks, Father Leo.
And I will be back with my carryout order. What did I learn? I learned a lot from Liz Lev here on Shoot the Shiitake. Welcome back for my carryout order. I'm so grateful to Liz for taking the time and to kind of share some of her thoughts and experiences as a Roman. We know that, you know, all of these conversations are going to be a little dated just because it's not live radio. But when she was talking about the Holy Father doing these pilgrimages, he's been doing that since the start of the coronavirus pandemic kind of took root in Italy. And we don't want to get political, but the fact is the Holy Father is or was a political leader, and his policies can affect politics. And what the Holy Father is trying to do is remind us that we have got to come together. And so for him to take the Blessed Sacrament, which again, for listeners who don't know, it is the host, the piece of bread that priests use during the sacred liturgy known as Mass or Catholic service, and we bless it. And we don't consider it a piece of bread. We consider it literally the presence of Christ, the body and blood of Jesus Christ. And so the remaining hosts, or an extra host that is consecrated or blessed to become the body and blood of Christ, is kept in a very sacred place in the church called the tabernacle. And we light a candle there to let us know that the tabernacle contains the sacred host, the presence of Jesus. In other words, in every church, there's a tabernacle, Catholic church, there is a tabernacle, and there will be a candle next to it to let us know that Jesus is home, that Jesus literally is present to us there in the Eucharist. And what the Holy Father did in a traditional blessing called Urbi et Orbi, which is almost basically the city in the center of the world, it's kind of where the world comes together. He put the host in a sacred vessel known as a monstrance, where we get the word mostrare in Latin, demonstrate in English. He wanted to show the world, Jesus, his presence in that very simple bread, but surrounded by an ornate sacred vessel. And, you know, priests do this at a prayer called adoration and benediction after they expose the Blessed Sacrament in this monstrance. So for people who don't know, it's you come to church and there will be an altar and there will be this sacred vessel sitting on the altar. And in the middle, we are mostrando, mostrare, we're showing the sacred host. And that is considered adoration of the Blessed Sacrament. At the end of this time of exposition, the priest or the deacon will take the monstrance, that sacred vessel, and bless people with it as a sign of God's presence spiritually dwelling in you. And that's exactly what the Holy Father did. He took the monstrance and he blessed the city and the centers of the cities of the world, especially since our whole world, I mean, I want you just to think about this. Our whole world is literally on a pause. There is no discussion or arguments about borders right now. They all respect the borders. We're all trying to contain a virus that can happen in people, that can be contained in people. And so we've got to stop the border crossing. That's not a political statement. That's just a biological reality. And now every politician who was for open door policies have some sort of border control. So what the Holy Father did was bless the people of the world. And why? Because the Catholic Church is technically, truly the only universal organization. I mean, I know that sounds so arrogant coming from a priest, but I just want you to look at the reality. The Catholic Church is the only human organization that has, first of all, lasted this long and who has a visible head, a visible body, which is the Catholic people, and the Pope being the head of the church here on earth, because Christ is the head of both the earthly and the spiritual church in heaven. So the Holy Father wasn't just speaking to Romans. He was literally speaking to the entire world and blessing the entire world. And why? Because Catholics are in all parts of the world. You know, like, so for example, you know, you have different forms of Muslims. They don't all have the same visible head. They might say they believe in the Quran and they believe in the tenets of Islam, but they don't all believe what the others believe because there's no visible head. And therefore, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, the vicar of Christ, the follower of Christ, wanted to bless his people. But he also did two separate pilgrimages. One was to the image of the Madonna Solus Populi, which is the health of the people. And that is contained in Santa Maria Maggiore Basilica in Rome. And he's made a special plea. And he took that image out of this sacred casing and he brought it to the city center, which is the center of St. Peter's Basilica. And he showed it to the world to let us know that Jesus is the health of his people. And then he took that pilgrimage cross, which is used in procession. And I loved how Liz was talking about how some of the persnickety people would complain that the cross is now exposed to the elements of the rain, because it was raining pretty hard, actually, when the Pope did it. It was such a somber, I mean, if I think about it, it was just like one of the loneliest, most saddest but also most hope-filled and beautiful moments, like, though I walk through the valley of darkness in the midst of the storms kind of thing, Christ is with us. And I'm grateful that he took that particular cross, which was used during the during the 1500s, during the plague, as a sign of hope. And Liz called it a rally cry, and it is a rally cry. I loved how she talked about how one of my jobs as a priest and all jobs as Christians is to help people find joy. And a lot of times, I got to admit this, people don't take the work that I do seriously because it's not quote unquote academic, it's not highfalutin theology. Well, you know what? I studied all that stuff and I was an academic and I kind of don't disregard academia. I like it, but let's admit it. You know, academia is only one part of who we are as Christians. We got to get practical. And one of the things that people need right now is a little bit of joy, a little bit of hope, a little bit of good news. And so I'm grateful that she kind of challenged me to make sure that we can provide that for people. And then another thing she kind of reminded me of is that this time of our life, this coronavirus is literally separating us physically, and we're almost seeing each other as particularly suspicious potential carriers of the virus, which will lead to this social distancing, which can sometimes lead to isolation. And I think this is a time when we can't do that. We have to be closer to each other. You know, obviously we want to take care of each other and do all the hand washing. You know, don't let your hands touch your face. You know, make sure that if you are sick, that you are kind of keeping a little bit of distance. But make sure you're not being isolated, because that's exactly what the devil loves to do. The devil loves to separate us in order to divide us so that the devil can conquer us. And now is a time for Catholics to come together. And so I'm grateful for you all listening. Whether you're Catholic or not, I honestly don't care. This is just a conversation between me and an art historian who knows a lot about the art that even was created in honor of situations like the bubonic plague. I mean, if you go to, so for example, you know, Prague, there's a whole set of monuments dedicated to fighting the evils of the plague, the Black Death, and basically erecting these beautiful religious shrines when people were eventually healed, and even quote-unquote miraculous healings. And I say that because, you know, I do believe miracles exist, and I believe that God is trying to prepare us all for a miracle now just by trusting more in not the image itself, but what that image evokes. And what does that image evoke? Faith. And where do you get faith? When you see the beauty of God through the art, through the culture, and that's exactly what Liz does every day when she talks about art and faith, which can really tell us a lot about who we are and the signs of the times. So I certainly hope that this carryout order helped give you a fuller perspective of everything that is going on in the world. I want to thank again my special guest, Elizabeth Lev. You can learn more about her. Just Google Elizabeth Lev, art historian, and you will certainly find out all of the amazing things that she does. And hopefully you enjoyed this conversation. Again, to support us, we definitely could use it. Just go to platinggrace.com/support us. It'll take you to the Patreon link where you can be a premium subscriber. And for a limited time, we're offering the subscriptions for a very low price. And so it's not going to last like that forever. But we want to just thank you for being a part of the show. And between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
Teachings for an Unbelievable World is a newly discovered work written by St. John Paul II, then Archbishop Karol Wojtyla of Krakow, in the years just after Vatican II. This is the first English language publication of this important work. In this hardcover book that Scott Hahn calls one of the greatest hidden treasures unearthed in our time, 13 brief homilies provide compelling teaching for Catholics in today's post-Christian world and give fresh insights into JP2's pontificate. You can get a copy of this important new book at AveMariaPress.com. Use code JP2Teachings, that's JPII Teachings, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.